I want to clear up confusion right away, make sure there's no confusion. The Covenant is a theocratic military alliance of aliens in the video game Halo. Covenant by itself is the name of a horror movie or an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. I am not talking about any of those. A covenant is an agreement or promise between two or more people. The word comes from a Latin root, which is also related to the word convene. So in UU communities, we say that a covenant is an agreement that brings people together. That's invoked by the progressive theologian Mendenhall. He was a liberal Lutheran, if you can believe it. Great thinker, interesting person. Mendenhall writing about the Jewish covenant and what it meant for all covenants, all these agreements. To invoke, especially in the Jewish and Christian traditions, an especially sacred or religious or spiritual promise or agreement. As Allison said, a promise made from heart to heart. We Unitarian Universalists also use the word covenant not only as a noun, but as a verb, as in the famous statement, we, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote our principles. We have seven principles, one of which is the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. This is a huge promise that draws us and connects us to all of humanity. Our promise is one of peace, to join in creating circles of deep, true, just, equitable, free, and compassionate peace. Not only to avoid driving in nails, but to patch the inevitable holes. One early covenant in the Bible, early mention in Jewish and Christian scriptures, is when Noah comes out of the ark and to express gratitude, you know, nearly the whole world's been destroyed, to express gratitude for having survived, he makes a burnt offering to God, and God likes the smoke. It literally says God finds it a pleasing scent. And God responds by encouraging humanity to increase and multiply. It's kind of an encouragement or a command. And then he also establishes dietary laws, and he establishes punishment for murder, and then return for all that he's asked of humanity. God makes a promise. Never again will all life be destroyed by the waters of a flood. And he says, this is the sign of the covenant that I'm making between you and every living creature with you. A covenant for all generations to come. I have set my rainbow in the clouds, and it will be the sign of a covenant between me and the earth. A beautiful, shimmering image of promise, of covenant that binds us together. Sadly, the biblical God did not say anything about more limited floods, and having lived in the Midwest, I know how destructive floods can be. And God said nothing about the kinds of floods that will be caused by the rising sea levels during global climate change, so we still have all that to worry about, and the rainbow doesn't help at all. One striking thing about covenants like these, is that there's no end clause or out clause. In a sense, once you're in a covenant, you're always in covenant, even if that covenant gets bent, even if that covenant gets broken. Marriage is often described like this, as a covenant. Back when marriage between gay persons was illegal, I made sure that any time I sat down with a couple, whether they're a gay couple or a heterosexual couple, I would explain the difference between the legal contractual marriage that was created by the state and the sacred vows, the sacred covenant that was created by a marriage ceremony or marriage vows. That all promises were equal in my mind. I may sure they understood the difference between a covenant and a contract. Along these lines, I saw a cartoon this last week. There was a couple, obviously dressed to go in and get married. They're going to a little wedding chapel, a cute little wedding chapel. But they were looking a little troubled because over on the side of the wedding chapel, there was a little service window. And the service window had a sign over it that said, "Returns and Exchanges." Sometimes we think we got the wrong one. Marriage invokes something larger. Marriage is often represented by rings, just like this one that I always wear, invoking an unbroken circle of wholeness, a promise that has no end. That's the ideal. Our religious tradition arises from this ancient insight that actions matter more than words. It doesn't matter what you say in a ceremony. It's how the beliefs and the words help guide and shape our actions that matter. We hold up principles as goals and guides for our actions, but we commit to help one another live by those principles by making a covenant. Theologically, we have replaced the old Christian idea of putting belief at the center of faith, belief, ideas at the center of what we trust, what we have faith in. What was the word faith? We have replaced belief with promises, the power to make promises, the power to keep promises. And we believe that communities, we trust that community. We hope that communities that are bound by covenants will slowly, progressively move more and more into the embodiment of those high ideals represented and spoken of in the covenant. Once there was a heterosexual couple in a congregation I served who were not getting along. Their marriage had been built on flash decisions and that were not grounded in the compatibility of their relationships, of their personalities, and they immediately started fighting. They never agreed on almost anything. They were arguing in front of their children every day, even at meals. It was an unpleasant household to live in, and they decided that they needed to divorce, that they were not going to be married. And they timed the divorce to end right at the end of the school year so that their children would have an entire summer to get used to having two different households. And then they got, and it seemed to be great. You know, they had separated, they completely separated completely. They'd do the passing of the guard, passing the children over to one to the other, one house to the other, every other week, a couple weeks. They had like 3 weeks here and then 3 weeks there. It was going really great until somewhere in the second or third month of the school year when they were both called into the principal's office because their son was not only behaving terribly, his grades had plummeted into the basement. And they found out that all the times that their son had said things like, "Oh, I did my homework at Dad's," he didn't do it at Dad's, or "Mom already helped me with that," Mom hadn't helped him at all. He was using the situation and expressing his resentment about the divisions in unskillful, unhelpful ways. And so the couple had to figure out how to communicate better, how to build up patterns of discipline so that they weren't fighting against each other. They had to find out patterns of communication so that they were working together. And they told me one Sunday, they told me they had this realization that though the marriage, of course, was completely over in a sense, their covenant that was created by their shared love for their children, the commitment they had made just that was forced on them, that grew out of them, out of their love for their children, their shared love for their children, meant that they would never be fully separate from each other. The covenant would hold them together and bind them together to work together and nurturing those children as long as they lived. So a covenant is not just an agreement, but a sacred promise that brings and binds people together and does not end even though it can change, even though it can be bent and even broken. The other thing about covenants that makes them very unlike contracts is that they have no punishment clause in them. Some leaders of a welcoming congregation program, we had a welcoming congregation, which is a very specific committee to help the congregation make sure that it is being welcoming of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, genderqueer people, helping the congregation be more conscious and directive. And they were having a conversation about polyamory, and there was a person who said, I have no respect for polyamory. I don't believe that you can have a commitment between more than two people that will ever be just and fair. And he was very adamant about this. And it upset the people in the meeting. They were saying, you have to be tolerant. You have to be understanding. And he said, I've been as understanding as I can be, and I know exactly what my opinions are. And they were angry. They tried to get him to take back his words. And he said, I'm not going to take back my words. I know what my opinion is. I am sharing my opinion with you. We are in community together. And the people who are leading this, there's two people, they had both been Anglicans at one point. So I don't know if they were bringing something Anglican with them, but, you know, Episcopalian. But they came to me and they said, we need you to punish this person. And you understand. In a new UU congregation, I said, well, where in the covenant does it say anything about punishing people at all? And especially about the minister punishing anyone. I don't have that power. The punishment comes from feeling broken and divided from one another. That's the only punishment, that you feel a brokenness in that thing that's supposed to be binding you together as one people. It is hard to hold to a covenant when we are angry. It is hard when we are hurt. It is hard when we are afraid. It's hard to even remember that we have a covenant or any of the words in it at all. You try next time you're angry with someone to recall the covenant that we say every Sunday. It's hard to hold promises. Napoleon, famous French leader, dictator, military leader, he once said, the best way to keep your word is to never give it. And this is literally true. You don't make any promises. You can't break your promises. We invoke an older insight. People with good intentions make promises, but people with good character keep their promises. And we want to be people of good character. And so we find and bind ourselves together in a covenant that encourages us to do amazing things, to dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to help one another in fellowship. You can still make agreements. You can make agreements that even have punishment. I remember a congregation, one of my colleagues had a person who had discovered Unitarian Universalism in jail. There was a chaplain, UU chaplain, who was serving in jail, and this person who had been imprisoned because he had committed some sexual aggression, sexual molestation, was being released. And when he was released, he wanted, So we always say this at the very, very beginning of our worship. You may have missed it. Turn off your cell phones. I once had I was in the middle of a memorial service, and someone's cell phone went off, and it was the Star Spangled Banner. And there were military people in the congregation who were very confused about whether they should stand up at that moment or not. So I was talking about this guy who wanted to be a member of a UU congregation, but he had committed sex crimes. And the minister and the board realized that they had to create a safe congregation for everyone, so they invited him to join them in an agreement. And the agreement included never being alone in a room with someone who identifies as female and never being within his arm's reach of someone who identifies as female. And if he could not do those things, he could not be allowed to physically be on the property of the fellowship, you know, the congregation. And for three or more years, he stayed to that covenant. He stayed to that discipline, that agreement. This is an agreement. And he became a full member of the congregation, and he loved being a Unitarian Universalist. But unfortunately, the demons came back. He started to drink, which he was not supposed to do because he knew it was a trigger and it was a danger. And then he started violating the arm's length rule. And then one day he walked into the nursery where there was a single woman, who was waiting for to see if anyone brought infants. And he just talked to her innocuously from across the room, but he had broken the agreement very consciously, knew exactly what he was doing. And so the board called him in and they said, "You have broken this agreement. You can no longer be on the property. You are still in covenant with us. You are still a member of this congregation, but you cannot be a member who comes to any of our activities on our property." So it is possible to make agreements that have punishment clauses, but the covenant is much harder because there is no out, and it is high ideals that are difficult to follow through, difficult to hold to. We actually have four covenants in this congregation. The first one is the one that calls us to live in harmony with all living things. It is the covenant of life and of being a living being on this earth, to be in right relations with the earth. It is really a covenant that binds all of us together, whether we acknowledge it or not. And then the second covenant is Unitarian Universalist, principles and purposes. We have agreed to be a part of a congregation that's promoting world peace and tolerance and spiritual growth. But the third covenant is one that should be most active. It should be most active in your life. You should think about it. You should think about how it's shaping your actions, because it's the one that we say every single Sunday. Those words are up there, and it's not just a pretty poem. We're supposed to be thinking, am I doing what I say that I'm going to be, that I'm going to do, to dwell together in peace and seek knowledge and freedom and help one another in fellowship? It's an interesting covenant. We've taken three words from adapted them out of the Christian tradition, spirit and sacrament and prayer. I'll talk about those some other time. The original version of the covenant that we say every Sunday was actually written in 1894 by the Church of All Souls in Evanston, Illinois. And then it was expanded a little bit around 1930 by a Unitarian minister named Griswold Adams, L. Griswold Adams, in a book of readings for Unitarian worship. And that version is included as 471. The earlier version is 473 in our hymnal. Many UU congregations throughout the 20th century have adapted those words, taken them, changed them a little bit. We changed them for our purposes, for this congregation, and made it ours. Beautiful words, ideals. But we've realized that they were too big, too general. And we wanted to have a more specific way of talking about the covenant that binds us together and how we're going to treat one another. What does it mean to dwell together in peace? What exactly, how do we work that out? And so we created another statement, another covenant, which is called the Covenant of Right Relations. It's on, printed on pink here. And we printed a big version of it, which I hung today on the back of the sanctuary. It's usually in the office. And then there's a smaller, medium-sized version that's in my study. It's a powerful statement. It is one of the best statements that I've ever encountered in Unitarian Universalist communities about how we are going to deal with conflicts, how we are going to come together to walk a spiritual path together. We strive to build a religious community dedicated to communicating directly. And I will tell you, I see that people want to do this, but we will fail. We do fail. There are times where we do not communicate directly. We start telling our friends something that we really should be telling someone else, or we talk about it behind their backs. Sometimes. To be respectful in our communication, patient and loving in our communications. And, you know, you can't do that all the time, especially when you're angry, especially when you're hurt, especially when you're afraid, right? It's hard. But we say when the inevitable challenges come, we admit that it will be difficult. When the inevitable challenges come in our interactions, we will stay in the community and we will reaffirm the values that brought us together. A couple weeks ago, I was carbon copied in on a chain of email exchanges. One of the people who was exchanging emails was concerned that there was a serious conflict that was brewing and wanted me to be aware of it. Now, I can go on and on about, you know, it's hard to hold a covenant when you're angry or hurt. It's even harder to hold a covenant when you're exchanging conversations and email. Email is problematic. Be careful with email. So I was concerned that there was this division between these two members of the congregation. And then I talked to one of them a little later, and he said, oh, we met face to face, and we talked about it. And at the end of the conversation, there was laughter and togetherness. This is the spirit of what it means to have this congregation have a spirit of love. I see the strength and the well-being of a community of people who come together with a covenant to nurture these qualities, to nurture these high ideals. You're not perfect. No one's perfect. I mess up all the time. But I commit and covenant to keep coming back, to stay in community and to be called by those high, beautiful images to make the world a better place, at least this part of the world, this part of humanity. And if we can do it, then those larger covenants with all of Unitarian Universalists and the larger covenants that bind us to all liberal religious people and the larger covenants that bind us to all humanity and to all living things remain, even though they are often broken and bent as nails. There are a lot of words in our covenant of right relations. I want you to look at those and think about them and think about interactions that you have with people in this congregation, whether you're a visitor or you're a long-standing member. Think about them. Apply them. But if there's too many words in that covenant, too many words in our other covenant, there's a very simple version, which is the song, number 155, Circle Round for Freedom.